And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We have had quite a wet year in the Cincinnati area, so what does that tell us about the changing climate? By studying rain and snow, NASA can better understand how to model natural disasters, forecast crop yields, and prevent waterborne diseases like West Nile and the Zika virus. And now, NASA has created the most complete record to date of rainfall patterns all over the world, with nearly 20 years of data. This record looks back for key clues to uncovering the future of our planet. So earlier, I spoke with eMERGE data team head at NASA and research physical scientist, Dr. George Huffman. George Huffman is a research physical scientist and the head of eMERGE data team and works with NASA. And he's going to talk to us today about precipitation across the globe and here in Cincinnati. George, thanks so much for taking some time with us.
I'm very glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate NASA sending us over this report and making you available to talk to us about it. We've seen some interesting phenomena here in Cincinnati just this year, earlier this year, back in May and in the early part of the summer. All of the forecasters were talking about the extraordinary amount of rain we've got. An article in the Cincinnati Inquirer back in June said we had gotten nearly 3 feet of rain by that point in the year. And here in the present, we're hearing about burn bans being issued from the counties because of a lack of rainfall. So can you just tell us a little bit about what the heck's going on?
This is actually very classical phenomenology for rainfall. The same thing has happened in Washington, D.C. We had our wettest year last year, and we're also basically bone dry until last night's inch of rain. The rain follows the weather patterns, and so if there is a persistent weather pattern, you know, you just get one rainstorm after another, and then the opposite happens, and now you're in a burn ban. This is sometimes called the Joseph effect from the biblical story of the seven lean years and the seven fat years. It is not unusual to have extremes one after the other in the opposite direction.
What does it tell us about what might happen next?
Roughly nothing. There are correlations, but like I said, this is driven by the weather patterns. And so if we set up with a persistent upper level low system over southern Canada, you know, Cincinnati is going to be cold and perhaps snowy. But it all depends on how those patterns set up.
So NASA just released this comprehensive record of rain and snow all around the world. So we've just talked a little bit about what we're seeing here in the Cincinnati and northern Kentucky area, but what are we seeing globally?
So what the global pattern is revealed by these satellite data, the idea is that the satellites see all over the world as opposed to just the local data that we get across the U.S. from the National Weather Service. This is particularly important in developing countries that don't have the good systems that the U.S. has, and certainly over the vast expanses of the ocean where there's no data at all. And so when you look at that data set, you start to get a good sense of what the entire pattern is, and it gives you a much better sense of how the climate functions on a scientific basis. And then from a user perspective, those data not only tell you about the science, but they can also be used very practically for things like flood forecasting, landslide forecasting, insurance policies that say if it rains more than a certain amount, we send you a check, and water management, and a whole host of other what are called societal benefit areas that are increasingly important as the world becomes more interconnected.
So are there real-life implications of the report then? Are there agencies who take this data to process their planning for whatever it is they may do?
Absolutely. So I mentioned before the insurance because I find this interesting. There are companies that write policies in developing countries. Things like adjusters and forms are a problem. And so they say if the NASA data set said it rained more than this, we send you a check. As well, the basic data get used by, say, the National Hurricane Center to identify and quantify hurricanes and typhoons. It's just amazing how, you know, the range of uses, things like disease forecasting. Mosquitoes and rainfall are obviously connected, and then disease follows mosquitoes. And so you can write little numerical models that say, if it rains more, you should have more mosquitoes and more of whatever.
Did we get any data related to diseases from this recent release?
Well, so this release is the rainfall data. And then it was released about a month ago. And now what can happen is the research is at work in these other specialties, floods, landslides, health issues, and so on, can then take that data set and start to apply it to their own work. One of the really cool things about this is that all the NASA data are free and open. And so when you go to the website, you know, it's like, how would you like the data, you know, for this format or that format? And so people at a variety of levels of expertise have a chance to actually use the data. This is different than the old days when the specialists, did data sets that got used by other specialists. It's much more broad-based now.
Okay, so I'm a guy who might wake up and look at the forecast to know what kind of jacket I might need this week. And you, of course, are a research scientist with NASA, so you're looking at forecasting much more intensely and less superficially than I am. But you also referenced hurricanes, and I'm wondering if anything surprised you as a researcher about what you found based on some of these extreme storms that our neighbors in the Caribbean have experienced, for example?
Right. The extreme storms in the Caribbean are certainly give you pause. And the climate question, which is not settled yet, is whether the more extreme storms that we've seen recently are somehow indicative of climate variation or whether it's simply a natural variation. One of the interesting things we've seen recently in Hurricane Dorian was we were using the brand new data set and plotting the day-to-day fluctuations in Hurricane Dorian's rainfall. And the person doing it came to me and said, we've got a problem. There's this pulsing in the data. And when we did some more analysis, it turned out to be every day there was a pulse. And when I was at a recent satellite conference, one of my colleagues happened to mention the recently discovered pulses in hurricanes, not looking at satellite data, he's looking at other data. And so already we're starting to have a discussion with these guys about doing a joint research project and see if we can tease out what's going on. This is probably fundamental to the way hurricanes work, not just the severe ones.
What does that mean exactly for those of us who don't know pulsing during the hurricane?
Well, so hurricanes increase and decrease in intensity during their lifetime, and it turns out that within the day, they increase and decrease in intensity. And so some of these shorter-term variations are not well forecast, not well characterized in older data sets. And so it turns out that perhaps we've stumbled onto a topic that needs to be researched.
NASA's calling this the most comprehensive record ever of rain and snow around the world. I'm wondering if during this process, anything surprised you?
Well, I think the most surprising thing about the data set is that as we have come along with more detailed information, it makes it more useful to outside users. I'm continually surprised at who cares. And so a couple of years ago, I happened to be at dinner with somebody I didn't know, turned out to be working in Alaska wildfire management. It turns out the Alaska wildfire managers care greatly about the rainfall in Alaska in the summertime because that helps suppress or enhance wildfires. And so it turned out that you know, we could help them. And so it's taken longer to get to that point than we wanted, but I'm hopeful that next fire season will actually be doing them some good. So this is just, you know, one more example of how the detailed data set turns out to be useful in places I didn't ever expect.
We're talking with George Huffman. He's a NASA scientist, and we're talking about the recent NASA report related to rain and snow around the world. And George, when we first started talking, we were specifically discussing Cincinnati and some of the phenomena that you see when you have heavy rainfall. You might see heavy periods of dryness as well. Earlier this year, NASA sent out a report as well that headlined, "Record-setting precipitation leaves U.S. soils soggy." And certainly our part of the region was darkly covered by that as having a higher percentile, ranking among the higher percentile of shallow groundwater wetness. What are the long-term implications of that? What will that mean for us down the road?
As you would expect, the soil moisture is really important for the agricultural interests on the one hand, and just the general ecosystems on the other hand. And so if you have really soggy soil, you know, this makes it really hard for the farmers to get in the fields, do the plowing, do the harvesting, and so on. And so it's really important to track this, because as agriculture becomes more data intensive, it becomes more important to understand whether are you at optimal conditions. If you're at suboptimal conditions, can you irrigate? Of course, if it's too soggy, you can't unirrigate, unfortunately. And so this having this additional information gives you the chance to do a better job of optimizing your production.
Well, here in Cincinnati, we did have a very wet spring and early summer and a dry late summer, early fall. But you looked at the whole planet. Tell us about the driest and the wettest spots on Earth.
This is one of the big advantages of using satellite data, which can see the entire globe. And so it turns out that the wettest place on Earth is over the ocean, just northwest of Colombia, sort of offshore of Medellin. And in contrast, if you go 2,000 miles to the south, the Atacama Desert is one of the driest areas. The interesting thing about the Atacama Desert is that that dry zone extends well offshore. And so over the ocean, there's the same complete lack of precipitation. And so in some sense, you have a desert over the ocean.
Wow.
It's just that since the surface is water, you can't tell.
So is that new? Or have these always been the wettest and driest places?
We have known qualitatively, certainly about the onshore, the deserts. I mean, it's not just the Atacama, but following that closely is Namibia, the Sahara Desert, the southwest of the U.S., but over the oceans now we have a more quantitative value than we ever had before, and it puts it in the context of, you know, the land deserts is put in the context of the broader view across the oceans as well.
Overall, as the general population listens to this story or reads about this report that NASA has put out, what are the average people going to be able to take away as they consider the impact of the changing climate?
So the really important thing is to think about the patterns shifting. It's not completely different, but it's shifted. And so, for example, what we expect is that as the climate warms, you should be getting wet areas will get wetter and dry areas will get drier. With a higher temperature, of course, you will tend to have more evaporation. So even when it rains more, it won't necessarily be soggier. It will just rain more often and more heavily, or rain more heavily when it does rain. I think the takeaway is that over the globe as a whole, the amounts haven't changed too much. It's just a shift in where it happens.
George Huffman is a research physical scientist and head of iMERGE data team. He's with NASA. George, thanks so much for taking some time to chat with us about this.
Michael, thank you very much. I was glad to talk to you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. The Democrats in the U.S. House are now working on their impeachment report, but one key leader in that process says more hearings could come. Meanwhile, the Democratic presidential primary adds another candidate with his own mountains of cash to pour into the race. And President Obama warns Democratic voters about so-called purity tests for candidates. We've got one full hour of analysis and your phone calls, The Political Junkie, tomorrow at noon on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.